So as iconic texts of the Bible go, obviously we've hit one of the most iconic texts. This is, of course, the beginning of the Lord's Prayer. Not quite the final version, because the version that we use, we've added a few pieces to sort of make it flow better. But the long and the short of it is, this is Jesus teaching his disciples to pray. Now, in the process of teaching them to pray, it does take a couple of fairly odd turns. If you're listening to the text, Jesus is telling his disciples first, this is the right way to pray. And then he goes on to have this very unusual story about a neighbor who has guests from out of town, presumably, come in the middle of the night and embarrassingly has nothing to offer them to eat. So he goes to his next door neighbor and says, hey, can I borrow some bread off of you? I've got some out-of-town guests and I don't have anything. And the neighbor's initially like, look, everything's locked up for the night. The kids are in bed. I don't want to disturb anybody. But of course, then the neighbor gets up because of the persistence of the knocker and goes and he provides them with some bread. And it almost gives us the misunderstanding that what Jesus is saying here is that in our prayer life, it's about persistence. That if we nag God enough, he'll say, okay, fine, you've nagged me enough, you can have this thing you want. Which, of course, is not how prayer works at all. If it were, back in 1985 or so, I would have had a Ferrari, or at the very least a Lamborghini, because at some point I probably did hound God a little bit about that when I was turning 16, and, you know, I didn't get one. And there's a good reason for that. First of all, I couldn't have afforded it. Second of all, I probably couldn't have driven it worth a darn. And third of all, again, that's not how prayer works. So when Jesus tells this story about the neighbor who knocks on his neighbor's door at 3 o'clock in the morning and is like, hey, can I borrow some bread? What is it that Jesus is actually trying to get across? And we get a better feel for it when Jesus begins giving some specific examples. He says, look, let's be honest, you're not perfect parents. Humans aren't. He's not necessarily saying that the disciples per se were terrible parents, just that humans aren't perfect, not like our Father in heaven is perfect. So you who are an imperfect parent, if your son or daughter were to ask you for, say, an egg, would you give them a poisonous insect or a venomous serpent? Well, no, you wouldn't have done either of those things because, you know, that's even bad parents know not to give their children vipers, you know. So what Jesus here is saying is that in the process of wanting to learn to pray, the disciples have made a fundamental mistake. And that I see reflected time and time again among Christians that I know and that I have worked with. And I hear this over and over again. I had this interesting experience early in my ministry. I was assigned to my first, sort of not quite internship parish. It was sort of the continuing ed parishes that you would go to on the Sundays. And you would be assigned to a congregation. And in theory, that pastor would help you to learn how to be a pastor by attending that worship service and being a part of that community. And that pastor would give you information and hints and set you in the right direction, a mentoring situation. I got paired up with this guy. This was, I think, his first actual congregation. He'd spent his entire career as a military chaplain. He's a fairly high-ranking military chaplain. And the problem with him was that he was really used to doing things the military way. Not so used to doing things the normal congregation way, if you will. And so on one of my first Sundays there, to welcome me as their student, they had a potluck dinner because, you know, they're Lutherans. We like to have meals. We like to have food. And so in the process of welcoming me at the potluck dinner, we got done with church service. We went down to the fellowship hall. We're all just kind of standing around awkwardly. And we're waiting. And I see the church council president. And I said, hey, Has pastor gotten busy? Do we need to like go say, hey, it's time for the prayer? We're all just kind of standing around. The food's getting cold. He's like, oh, you ask him. I'm not asking him. And I was like, okay, what am I missing here? He says, well, last time we had a potluck dinner and somebody said, hey, you know, the food's getting cold. Why hasn't pastor prayed? They went and asked him, said, hey, why haven't you prayed? And he was like, why do you need me to pray? God doesn't listen to me anything more than he listens to you. If you need a thing done, go do it. Go pray if you need the prayer done. And so they're afraid to ask the pastor now to pray for fear that he's going to give them a good old-fashioned military dressing down. And so the council president said, would you be willing to do the prayer? And I'm like, sure, I'll pray for the food. I mean, assuming that that's not stepping on the pastor's toes. He's like, oh, no, we're not asking him again. He gets really upset. So I said the prayer, and, you know, it was not the most pastoral moment for that other pastor. He did not convey the message that he was trying to express in a way that was sufficiently pastoral, such that his congregation understood it. But his message was still valid, and that is that there's nothing about the way a person prays that makes the prayer more effective. If you pray in Old English, if you're thee-ing and thou-ing all over the place, and some other person, some poor, uneducated peasant, can't thee and thou at all, neither prayer is more effective. If you're praying and it's fluid and it's beautiful and it's thought out, but at the same time feels heartfelt, and everybody that's listening to you thinks, oh, that's so well worded, that's not a better prayer than the person who stumbles and stutters and repeats themselves and has to go back and start over again. Neither prayer is more effective. This is what Jesus is trying to get across to his disciples when he teaches them to pray. And he gives them this Lord's Prayer, and we still use it. And it is essential to our understanding of the gift of prayer. But compared to the normal prayers that would be offered in Jesus's time, it's teeny tiny. He gives them this prayer that's barely a few stanzas long. People in Jesus's time, they're used to the notion that when you pray, it's going to be this long, drawn-out affair. You're going to say this, you're going to do that, it's going to include this. And, you know, the assumption is that if you're praying for a meal, it's not a good prayer unless the food's cold. So Jesus gives his disciples this prayer that's teeny tiny. And it's got to be confusing to them in that moment. And then he gives them these examples of, you know, this person who knocks and the neighbor doesn't want to give food, but he does anyway. And then he gives this example of these parents who are giving the correct gifts to their children, and they're not foolish enough to be handing out scorpions and snakes. And the point to it is, the efficacy of our prayers is not tied to how smart we are, how capable we are at public speaking, how well we've put together a phrase. God isn't listening and going, oh, I give that one a 10 out of 10, or, ooh, that one's kind of rough, 4 out of 3, out of 10. No. That's not how prayer works. God is listening to his children, you and me, all of us. He's listening to everything that we say when we pray. And as a result of the fact that God is listening, he is responding to our prayers not out of our able-bodied speaking skills, but out of his own wisdom. See, God answers prayers out of his own wisdom. He answers prayers based on what is right. He answers prayers based on what is good. He hears the prayers as an act of faith. The most faithful person on the face of the planet could offer a prayer that is absolutely painful to listen to, poorly put together, stuttering, stumbling, repeating, missing things, maybe throwing some these and thous in for no reason. And that prayer would still be heard by God as a prayer of deep faith and responded to in like kind. Whereas the most skillful able public speaker to ever stand in a pulpit could offer a prayer that absolutely makes you weep. But if that person offers that prayer with no faith, in a faithless fashion, God is going to answer that prayer out of his wisdom likewise. And that doesn't necessarily mean that God's going to say no, because God's going to do what God thinks is best in that situation. But it's not the skill or the gifts or the ability of the prayer to say the prayer in a way that motivates God to do something. It is God's response to the heartfelt faith of the person offering the prayer that matters. And that response is always from a place of love, grace, mercy. And as Jesus is pointing out here, the perfection of a father who knows right from wrong, good from evil, so much greater than earthly parents. And Jesus's point is even earthly parents answer their children appropriately. So wherever you are in your prayer life right now, maybe you feel like you've got a knack, you've got this thing down, you're good, you can put together a prayer that is well thought out and capable. Or maybe when it's time for you to have some alone time with God, you're like, I don't even know what I'm supposed to say. And you just ramble. It doesn't matter. Our prayers are made effective not by our skills or abilities, but by the God who loves us, cares for us, and hears us. So obviously I'm not able to be there with you today, and I'm glad I'm able to share this message with you as you are worshiping today. It doesn't matter how you pray the prayer, doesn't matter how you sing the song, doesn't matter how good you are at the liturgy. It just matters that God, who knows your heart, is listening. Thanks for being with us today. God bless. See you next week.